This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, I'm not pleased. Dave, I'm just going to ask you about air travel. Minneapolis to London, they have flights directly, right? Dave, do they have flights directly?
Oh, you can get yourself a flight.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Seems like Chip Scoggins could be available. We could record at 11:05. We could do a live at 12:05. You're not emphasizing this highly touted, highly acclaimed, not paid appearance in your travel schedule coming back?
I'm actually coming back Tuesday, but I don't know where we'll be Monday in London. So I didn't get it direct to London.
Wait a second. Now we're even more angry. You're going to be in London. Are you just sightseeing, or what are you doing?
No, I don't know where I'll be on Monday, to be honest with you.
This is maybe work
in London. I know that.
Maybe work assignment potentially.
There will be a football cross Minnesota London edition coming next Monday.
All right. Well, we'll just.
I'm sorry. I apologize.
Should we shut the show down Monday, Dave? I mean, come on.
No,
Scoggins is here.
I think we look for a permanent replacement.
Yeah, that's it.
And I'm sure Chip will be very disappointed
sanctions.
To hear that.
Very. There'll be a level of sanctions.
It was a good run for me.
Yeah, it was a good run. Okay. When they're up 21-0, I think I put a tweet out. Let's just end the conversation. They right now, without a doubt, are the most impressive team in the National Football League. Not a doubt. Then they scored again. Okay, then it's 28-0. Then Jalen Naylor screws up. Everything falls apart, but they win the game. They win the game. They're 4-0. They're with the Chiefs, and they've been more impressive than the Chiefs so far. The Chiefs are the two-time defending champions. They have Pat Mahomes. I'm aware of all that. Should Vikings fans today be spending more time on what a spectacular month you beat two great teams, and Green Bay might be very good, plus it's Green Bay? Or should they be more worried about, uh-oh, what happened in the second half, and what does that mean for the next few weeks?
Yeah, I don't want to overreact to the second half because I felt like at least defensively they got away from what we've seen the first three games in the first half of that game. We just saw big gaps in their secondary where Love was able to just – I mean, guys were wide open. There was a bust, I know, on their on one of the touchdown throws where guys – wide open there in the end zone. So it felt like there were some things happening, and I don't know if that was because they were up so much and they just, you know, were content to kind of sit back and weren't as aggressive, but it just felt uncharacteristic of what we've seen. And I don't want to overreact. I mean, I don't, you know, completely dismiss it as nothing, but I don't know if I want to overreact to it. And the Jalen Naylor situation, you know, he should have just let that ball go. I mean, he's not the regular punt returner. And it's funny, we talked about it last year at this time or before the game. We said, you know, there's always something weird. The Star Tribune writers, when we were driving over, it's like, there's always something weird when the Vikings play there. We've seen so many just kind of goofy things happen, just weird things happen, and then Cousins goes down with an injury, right?
Mm-hmm. And Antonio Freeman, even before.
Go down the list. The mutiny. Remember the Mike
Zimmer,
the guys went rogue, did their own thing.
Right.
It seems like every year we go there, there's something weird happens. And then Naylor tries to.
Ridiculous.
Loses the punt in the sun, I think, and tries to catch it over his head. And I'm like, here it comes. Here's the weird part. You know, I know people were kind of grumbling about the offensive play calling, particularly the fourth and one. I understand what O'Connell was doing there, trying to just show guys he has confidence. I probably would have kicked the field goal and make him score two touchdowns to beat me, but I understand his philosophy and that's what he's sticking with. So that's just who he is. But I don't know. I'm just not going to overreact to that second half because I felt like the defense was just not the defense that we've seen in terms of their aggressiveness and play calling.
Yeah, in the main, I agree with you 100%. I also think if you look at when they're 28-0 and you think they're going to play at this high a level every single game, no, they're not the 72 Dolphins. But it can't get out of my head. I can't get it out of my head how well they have played for huge stretches of the season. Mm-hmm. 3 minutes and change behind, and that's only because maybe their most reliable guy fumbled, C.J. Ham, and after that it was just toying with the Giants. And then what they did against San Francisco and the Texans, and, man, those refs, we both, in separate tweets, use the word clinical. It was clinical what they were doing. I think it's unavoidable if you watch sports, if one team has a significant lead, and then a team starts coming back, we can't quantify momentum, but we see it when it's going on. And it was happening yesterday. There's no doubt. And I think the Packers were embarrassed. I'm not sure, even though Love finished around 400 yards, considering the way he was moving and the way Willis played the previous few games, I would have probably went with Willis. Now, he made some better throws lately. But you're 100% right. All of a sudden, the Packers were picking apart the Vikings defense. And I just don't believe that was one moment where everyone in the league is going to look at those plays and they figured out maybe Flores just pulled off the gas or he did different things. But I think it's way more the first half. Now, let me get to the fourth and one.
Yeah.
I think he is one of those guys in O'Connell who really tries to read the temperature in the room. Ever since he came here, he goes out his way, I love this team. I love this team. I believe in him. And he tries to send signals, practice when we're not there, meetings when we're not there, but then also gestures like that where I am going to believe in you. The more logical and I think analytical move is kick the field goal, two touchdowns, that amount of time to do it. But he's trying to show everybody out there, I'm with you, and even if the circumstance don't make ideal sense, I'm going to back you guys no matter what.
Well, and that was the theme in the post-game locker room yesterday, where just his aggressiveness and showing faith in the players, and whether you're trying to get Aaron Jones a touchdown or just saying, you know what, I believe that we can get 1 yard and we're going to do it this way and score that way.
They were trying to get Jones that TD. That was correct. Very evident.
Yes, and if it didn't work, he's saying, I trust my defense that they're going to stop him. Now, it didn't work out. Recover an onside kick, but you're right. He is very intentional on sending message to his players that he has faith in them and that he trusts them and that he's going to be an aggressive coach and he's not going to probably take the conventional way of doing things, which I think most coaches would have kicked the field goal there and said, there's no way this team could score two touchdowns in that amount of time. I thought it was, I don't know if reckless is the word. It was, you know, it left open to more of a possibility that the Packers could come back.
Right.
But I also admire a guy who's going to go for it and believe in his players. And so if you're going to carry that mindset, sometimes it's not going to work out and it's going to look risky, you know. And it wouldn't, you know, the defense can still stop him. They don't have to allow him to go 90-something yards.
Easy.
easy, like it was nothing, you know. And I just, you know, I wonder how much, too, did the defense just kind of – and let's give Packers credit. Love made a couple plays, but but also, like, to me, the moment of truth in that game is when it was 28-22 and O'Connell came out and said, you know what, Darnold, we're throwing the ball down the field. And
all the time.
He called four straight passes. Or he allowed them the first pass to Jefferson on first down, I thought, was just the play of the game. Because then they could relax.
Right.
Now they're moving again, and they're near midfield, and so
what a catch! I mean, honestly,
But he's also look how much faith he is showing in Sam Darnold.
You're 100%
being rewarded for it.
That's kind of both our points. He is banking on words and actions in May, in, you know, phone visits, training camp, and this, that two or three times it's going to blow up in his face, but he thinks over the totality of a relationship and a season, it's going to pay off. Yesterday also was a reminder, Jordan Addison, good at football. Yeah, that is a really good weapon to get back.
Well, Chad, how many times have we talked on your show about the speed of this team? And that was in my mind that whole first half. Well, you know when you hear coaches say, I want my team to play fast? To me, the Vikings were playing at a different speed than Green Bay was in that first half. I mean, it was the stutter and go route by Addison to get free. The move he made on that corner on that jet sweep to get through. Aaron Jones has brought a level of speed to this team. Jalen Naylor on that crosser, the big play, the 27-yarder, he's showing his speed. They're just a lot faster.
Mm-hmm.
And at the skill position, it's showing up in a big way for their offense.
Let's pause and let's talk about the horrible baseball the Twins played for a long time. And then let's talk about the courage they showed in holding the press conference while the Vikings and Packers are playing. I mean, come on. Chip wrote about it with Joe Pola. There's a lot to digest about the Twins. We'll get to it in moments on CCO.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Twins go 12-27 last 39 games, and any debate, if there was one, this was the worst collapse in franchise history. Can I just start with a little media thing from the get-go? I get that it's the last game of the season, but many, many times organizations will meet you, and they'll have, whether it's the owner, the GM, head coach, maybe a day or two later, to have that as quickly as they had it, when the Vikings and Packers are playing in Green Bay, come on. I thought that was pretty weak. What did you think?
I didn't even know that was going on until I got home last night driving back from Green Bay and I saw the news coverage because we were, you know, locked into watching the game. So I would say it was very surprising to me that, like, you're right, normally you have the year-end stuff after the season ends. To have it during the Vikings-Packers game where a lot of the media were out of town – that wasn't coincidence.
No, that was not. They're burying it. They're trying to hide bad news. They all know it. And some of those folks I like a lot, but you know what? You got to stand up when it's great, and you got to stand up when it's terrible, and they weren't standing up when it's terrible. Okay? They were, hey, more of the columnists are there. We're not letting you know. All right, for the folks who missed your Joe Polad column this weekend, how do you recap it, and then how do you react to what Joe Polad had to say yesterday?
Yeah, I did kind of my 30,000-foot view from the, you know, this collapse. And to me, when we're assigning blame, everybody gets blamed, but I start at the top. And I thought Joe Polad just set a very bad, negative tone from the very beginning, back with Jason on your station, mm-hmm. where he said he's going to – you know, they had no interest in pursuing high price free agents, and they're going to right size the payroll, right size their business. And the team had let it known to all the beat writers to kind of filter out even before that, that the payroll was going to go down. They had slashed the payroll by, you know, what, $30-35 million. Mm-hmm. And so coming off that playoffs, you know, win, series win, win your first
that's
game.
That's the key part.
You have the, that's the whole thing. It's like you have this momentum as a organization. And to take all that goodwill with the fans, and they're re-energized, and they came back, and I was at Target Field for those playoff games, and it was awesome.
It was great. Yep.
And to say, you know what? Nah, we're going to cut payroll because of the TV thing, and we're not going to chase free agents. I mean, just what do you think that sends to your fan base? Like, what do you think that does when you already, the name Polad is already associated with being cheap with the fan base? Like, that you couldn't have had a worse PR move. And what does that say to your team, your front office and the players too? And then to not do anything at the trade deadline, I think it starts at the top. And then I saw some of Joe's quotes yesterday that the payroll's not, they float out the payroll is not going to go down. I know Aaron Gleeman pressed him pretty hard on it, I think, and
rightfully so.
Basically said he's not going to get into it publicly about the payroll. I don't know. I mean, this is what I do know. They have so much damage to undo with the fan base. I think they finished, 24th in attendance,
mm-hmm.
even though they were in a playoff race all the way till the final weekend.
Yep.
They should be alarmed by that. And they know privately that they have a lot of issues to fix.
I'm not sure Joe does. I really am not sure.
Think he doesn't understand the perception of...
I'm not sure. From people who I trust, I know other people in that front office who absolutely know it. Because you nailed it. I'm just going to reiterate it again. You have the 18-year drought, and then you win against Toronto, and then you play a competitive series against Houston, and you've got starters. Okay, let's say Gray leaves. Fine. And maybe if you don't get a guy as strong as Gray. And I get that it's $30 million. But this isn't the time for the billionaire owner who's trying to prove himself that I'm the new sheriff. Okay, he's now in charge, his second year when he makes this decision. And again, I'm glad he answered Jason's question because I want honesty. But this wasn't the time to do it. And when Gleeman is pressing him on, well, do you separate this business from other businesses because it's so different? And he's like, no. And then when Aaron tries to push him on, well, if we win, they'll come back. Joe Polad, here's another reason why I think he misses things. When this team was contracting, he once wrote a letter to the Star Tribune basing a columnist for not supporting the Twins enough. Do you know who that columnist was? That would be my father. So when you're telling me about Joe Polad's senses for what's going on with the media, the public, one of all people, the guy who carried Carl's water incessantly and never once in his life criticized Carl Polad. So do I think Dave St. Peter in the front office people get it? Yes. And regarding if they're great next year, that's when they're going to build attendance. Because when they're going back to sell, the hard of hardcores are going to stay. But those people who are the 40-gamers, the 20-gamers, are going to say, are you kidding me? And I don't mean to take the players off the hook on this. Because when Pablo needed to step forward late, did not do it. Royce Lewis, if he tells me one more time he's tired.
I know.
I mean, it just... Royce officially bugs me now on the I don't do slumps and every other quote was tired effect. Let's just get the players as part of it too. Here's what I think is going to happen. I think they're going to scapegoat a couple coaches, which always happens. I don't think, I'll say on the record, I don't think Falvey or Rocco should have been fired. I don't, especially Falvey. If you take $30 million away from now, did they sign some guys where it failed? Absolutely. Margo, failure. The
pitchers that are always hurt.
Yeah, the pitchers already hurt. You know, that doesn't mean he gets a contract extension, but I wouldn't fire him. And Rocco, I think Falvey and Rocco are under different pressure. Okay. But are they really, when they're talking about we got to be different, you know, you can be different, do something dramatic.
Yeah.
Will they do something dramatic when one of their main big knocker players is dealt? What is your guess? And by the way, the guy I'm putting in the conversation is Royce. Would they trade Royce Lewis and try to get high-quality return? Because I'm not talking about trading like somebody's just okay, like a big name player and make a blockbuster type of deal. Because it's not Lopez. It's not Ober. Correa, they need to keep begging Correa to play, although it'd be nice if he could play more than 90
Durant?
Games, right?
The Durant?
Would you trade Durant? I mean,
well, I will say this. I don't know specific players there. I will say this. They have to do something dramatic.
Yeah.
If they come back with the team mostly intact with, except for some minor moves like Kyle Farmer, that's not going to move the fan. They have to do something dramatic and something that shows a commitment. Because right now, you polled 100 Twins fans, and I'm even thinking diehards, and ask them, do you think this ownership is committed? And I guarantee you 100 will say no.
Yeah.
There's a crisis in confidence in this whole group. And so they have to do something dramatic to show the fan base that that they're going to invest in it. And that was the headline of my column. Where I said, get serious or sell the team.
Yeah.
Someone that is going to do it. And so,
and they can come back and they can talk, and they're right. They have spent significant money on Target Field. Right. And I'm sure they've taken losses. Perception isn't fair, but some facts are reality. It was just the wrong time to do it. It absolutely was wrong time to do it. I just want to say one more thing on Lewis. I think it is notable that when two times in the last week he was talking about his fatigue, and both times, rightfully so, whether it was Phil Miller, Dan Hayes, Doe, or might have been, went to Correa, and one time it was about, young guys not showing up early on BP, and it was clear that Lewis was in the mix. And then when Lewis talks about tired again, another quote from Correa was, I don't want to hear about tired at this point.
Yeah.
Well,
that's it.
Twice publicly refuting what Lewis is saying. That, to me, said, whoa, Correa gets it. And, Chip, if that was in a bigger market, that would be even bigger news, that Correa just corrected him right away publicly, not behind the scenes, my arm around you. But maybe it tells me he's tried to correct him, and it didn't work. So go, okay, fine. I get asked a question. I'm going to answer.
Well, let me ask you this, Chad. When they're in a free fall and Roy says, I'm terrified to go from third to second, why are you doing this?
Right.
How do you think that went over in the clubhouse?
Terrible. Yeah, I don't do slumps. I'm terrified, and I'm tired multiple times. So that's why I'm saying, I'm putting out there, I think they're going to take more than take the temperature on him. I think they should.
Surprising. Yeah, I mean, but he also, they could say, you're young, but there needs to be a heart-to-heart with him saying, Royce, come on now.
Yeah.
I mean, you're going to have to figure this out. You have to fight through the fatigue, and we can't, be saying you're terrified to do this or you're tired or bringing this up because, they needed you. I mean.
And I'm not talking cutting him. It would have to be notable value. Right, but he hit .210. I mean, for like 67 games. All right, my friend. When do you go to London, by the way?
I am leaving Wednesday night, getting there Thursday, so I'll be there all week, late this week, and looking forward to it. So.
Yeah, you should. It's fabulous. All right, man, travel safe.
Okay, brother, we'll talk to you. See you.
Kevin Burke, the former judge on Mary Moriarty and the police in misconduct. Kevin's next. It's our friend, longtime Hennepin County judge, including chief judge, now retired, the great Kevin Burke, is with us. The former judge is on the John Schuster Caldwell Banker, like all of our guests. Kevin, always a pleasure. I saw the Tribbs story, Hennepin County Mary Moriarty campaign and holding police accountable since February. Her office has filed nearly 600 motions seeking private records of the police working its cases. You're quoted in the Jeff Day story. How notable, how significant is this for Moriarty to take this tack with law enforcement?
Well, the United States Supreme Court ruled well over 50 years ago in a case called Brady versus Maryland that it is the obligation of prosecutors and police to turn over information to the defense that might be exculpatory or mitigating. So And I understand that a lot of people will think, well, what do you mean? Look, why should they help the defense? They're on the prosecution. It's like, why should the Vikings help the Packers during the game?
Yep.
I get that. But think of it this way. If you had a very serious disease, and they're talking about life-threatening disease, you would want a second opinion, correct? And
sure.
If you did, you would certainly want the second doctor to get a complete picture of what your medical history is. So when the prosecution or law enforcement doesn't turn over material that might be exculpatory or mitigating, it's like getting a bad second opinion from a doctor. The difficulty that we're in, which I think generates the story and maybe even the activity of the county attorney's office, is despite the fact that this has been around for over 50 years, there are very egregious examples of material not being turned over. So, for example, there was a gentleman in Louisiana who spent 14 years on death row because the prosecution there routinely didn't turn over exculpatory or mitigating evidence. So I think that what people's reaction should be is, yeah, maybe there might be an easier way to get to the place that the Supreme Court wanted in 50 years ago. But for anyone who's a prosecutor or a defense lawyer or a judge to take umbrage at the idea of we're simply trying to make sure we, quote, got it right, I don't think it's a big deal.
Okay. But let's get to the backdrop and the perception, fair or not, that a lot of people have. That Moriarty, since she has taken over, and this is the perception by a lot of people, myself included, has made some surprising and head-shaking decisions on cases where a lot of people, again, myself included in some cases, thought there either should have been no charges or the charges should have been softer. And there are many visible people in law enforcement who have been very frustrated by Moriarty, including the chief of police in Minneapolis, Brian O'Hara. So there may be,
this issue has nothing to do.
Well, let me just finish.
Go ahead.
So there may be people in who have this perception of Moriarty should be working more in tandem with law enforcement, saying, now, wait a second. You're on the prosecution side, and you're pursuing information on the police. That just adds to how I feel about you, that you haven't been strong enough in these cases. For those folks who feel that way, what do you say to them?
But it's the obligation of the police to turn this information over. It's obviously been a problem nationwide for decades that information doesn't get turned over. We in Minnesota, I think, can point with pride that it's not often that you find Brady violations in Minnesota, but they do occur. And for example, the Star Tribune said, or had a story, and I don't know all the details, but the Minneapolis police characterized warnings or something like that as not disciplined, so they didn't have to disclose it. Well, you know, that's the beginning of a very slippery slope. There's a difference between turning something over to the defense under Brady and agreeing that it is admissible. You could end up saying, well, I'm turning this over, but I'm going to fight like tooth and nail to say that it won't come in the trial.
Sure.
But when you end up hiding the ball, you got a problem.
Okay. I'm going to read again right from Jeff Day's story. In the past, the Hennepin County Attorney's Office has fought against defense seeking the same type of private police data. Individual argues that the defense request is individual and not legally the same as the attorney's office making the same request. Without any legal basis, the defendants were conducting a fishing expedition. This is an individual who was involved in this. So,
I was a judge for nearly 40 years.
Right.
There were, a very few motions by the defense that were asking for in-camera inspections of police reports willy-nilly. That is just nonsense. The idea that if you're going to end up saying, what pride do we have in the justice system in Minnesota, it would go something like this. We're a state blessed with the vast majority of police are dedicated people. Mm-hmm. The vast majority of prosecutors are dedicated good people, and so is the defense bar. So the idea that this is some kind of, oh, it's a trick by the defense lawyers, the bottom line is we're in a society that had a guy on death row for 14 years, and you know what the United States Supreme Court said? You can't sue the prosecutors who didn't turn over the information. You can just get out of death row. So the idea that this is something that we should get all exercised about is this should be routine.
Okay, so I want to stay with that. I want to remind people, Judge Kevin Burke is with us, as he points out, almost 40 years as a Hennepin County judge, right? Chief judge. So in an ideal world, whether it's Mary Moriarty or Kevin Burke is the Hennepin County attorney, would you like to see it as standard operating procedure that the county attorney's office, if there's a police officer involved in this case, that you seek out all those records and get them out there so everybody can see them, even though, again, the Hennepin County Attorney's Office is the prosecution building the case against the defendant?
Well, it doesn't quite go everybody can see it. So,
well, all the people in the case can see it.
Well, yeah, but it might not even be that. So,
okay.
For example, when you ask for an in-camera inspection by a judge of confidential records, which happens pretty frequently, actually, in juvenile court cases where it's not law enforcement at all, you go through a file and you see most of that stuff is not relevant, but or not admissible, or not relevant, or not exculpatory, or not mitigating, and that's the end of it. So, and I've done a ton of those too. So it's not something to get really exercised about. What we have to achieve, though, is making sure that information is promptly turned over. You don't want to end up discovering 2 or 3 years later, as it happened in a recent case that I saw that got some notoriety, that, look, there were mistakes by law enforcement, and we're going to have to start all over again and apologize to somebody who has been wrongfully convicted.
All right, good. So can I ask you broadly,
sure,
on the Moriarty discussion?
Yep.
As someone who lived this decade after decade after decade, still is involved in the law. A lot of people have the perception that they're not very happy with Moriarty and her approach. As someone who still believes in Hennepin County and knows this, let's see, 1,000% better than I.
If you look at what the county attorney does as opposed to the career prosecutors, they're largely good people doing thousands of cases that get no coverage whatsoever. So I think that before people get all exercised about Mary Moriarty, you ought to at least pause and say, you know, the fact of the matter is virtually none of those 4,000 felonies are going to be individually fly-specked by Mary Moriarty or Mike Freeman or Tom Johnson or Gary Flackney or George Scott before that. You have a very good group of assistant county attorneys who are very professional, and I have confidence in them.
Kevin, you're always tremendous.
We got one last thing you got to say is you got to get on the Twins and say no cutting our payroll.
Yeah.
We need.
Oh, trust me. I just did a lengthy, rather specific segment directing that towards Mr. Pollat himself. So, yes.
Good for you.
Yes. Thank you, Kevin.
Bye-bye.
Kevin Burke, really good in that because a lot of that information I think people see it in the Trib and think, okay, what's going on? Moore aired again. And Kevin's saying, calm down. This is out there. I think it is telling that it's different from how Hennepin County was doing it before with the attorney's office. Meanwhile, we're watching this ball game. Okay, we're doing the show. We're also watching the ball game. The Braves are up 3-0 in the
going sixth. To the top of the eighth.
Going to the top of the eighth, exactly. Then the Mets score 6 runs.
Yes, an inning that started 40 minutes ago.
And by the way, we're about as confident and cocky as you can be in scoring those 6 runs, right? That was not old school baseball.
Mm-mm.
That was shoving it right down the Braves' throat. What did the Braves just do?
I just played it 4.
They just scored 4, so they've taken the lead again. This is a doubleheader. So the team that wins the first game of the doubleheader, they're automatically in. So if the Braves maintain this 7-6 lead, the Braves are in the playoffs. If the Braves also win the second game, who's in the playoffs? The Diamondbacks.
Yes, I just knew the Mets were out. I couldn't remember who was in there.
The Diamondbacks. So right now, if it holds, and God knows, it's been a crazy game. By the way, this is why you missed the playoffs, because this is basically playoff baseball, even though it's not technically playoff baseball. But if the Mets win this next game and the Braves don't have any reason to play, there's no advantage for them. They're now in. Then the Mets get in and not the Diamondbacks. What a and by the way, this game was supposed to be played last week.
Yeah, hurricane, you know, it gets in the way. It's fine.
Pretty crazy stuff. 51 past 2.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
For the past 3 seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a 4th season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.